Blog Talk Radio.
Our guest today is Joanne Parks, and she is the keeper of Max, the Texas Crystal Skull. Joanne, are you there? Kay, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, we are so excited to have you today. This is awesome. And maybe, Joanne, give us a little background about how this all came about for you.
Oh, gosh. The background how this came about for me is amazing. This was not really part of my life at all. Crystal skulls, nothing. This was, you know, I was totally clueless.
What's a crystal skull?
Well, crystal skulls are just what they say. They are carved. It's pieces of quartz crystal that are carved in the shape of the human skull, so thus a quartz crystal skull. And they are used for many things. People use them in as their healing tools, as their the tools are focused. They meditate with them. They go back into ancient history, and Max came into my life at a time that I wasn't even prepared for him.
Now, maybe before we start asking you how you got all started with this, I would like to ask you, what makes this crystal skull unusual? I mean, I've read something like it was different inside, and people thought, oh my goodness, you know, there would be no way for us to create this kind of thing.
Correct. What makes this crystal skull? Because there are many crystal skulls out there. They're all over the world. I have had Max been Max's keeper for 30 years. I have shared him with the world for 20 years, and I had to even learn, like everybody else learns, I had to learn what he was about and why and what made him different. And through the years, I have learned that most of the crystal skulls that people have today are what they call contemporary skulls, and they're carved out of Mexico and Germany and China, and most of them are come out of China, and they're carved with what they call a high RPM tool, which is revolutions per minute, which are diamond tools. And crystal is somewhat brittle. It will shatter very easy. So on the Mohs scale of 1 to 10, diamonds are a 10, crystal are a 7. And so it means it takes diamond tip tools, but it's somewhat brittle, so it needs to be a pretty high quality quartz. And even in that, if you hit a little bubble, hit a little inclusion, just the vibration of those tools makes such much of vibration, it'll go through the stone and split it. Well, I found over the years that Max is a different type of crystal. With most crystals, when they're sheet crystal carvings and you have crystal balls, they are made up of one piece. They have one structure to them. It makes them one piece. And I found out that Max is actually, his structure is not made up of one piece of crystal. It's made up of five different layers of crystal that are growing together in different directions, which means he gives out energy in all those five different directions. And you don't see carvings like this. It's got gases and water all through it. It has cracks in it that come to the surface. We're not just talking about internal flaws that you can look inside and see what is in crystals. These flaws come to the surface where you can put your fingernail on the different pieces of crystal. And then it has matrix in it, which you don't see carvings with matrix in it. Generally, the carver will go for a good piece because of artwork, or the matrix is very difficult to carve into. The matrix is the shell that the crystal grows in, the rough part, the hard part, like a geode or something. And the carver will generally carve that out, or they take and turn the matrix and put it on the bottom. If the crystal is large enough, then they carve up. But whoever them were decided to reverse that matrix, and the matrix goes through it at an angle, which means that matrix is amplifying all those other pieces of crystal around it. So it not only does it give off energy strangely in all these different crystals, it's being amplified by the matrix going through it. So this is what makes Max different.
Wow. I didn't even realize that. That's tremendous.
Well, he hides, and maybe he does this on purpose. He hides these flaws and cracks and pictures. When you just take a look at him, he looks like one piece. However, the geologists and the crystal carvers that know the complexity that it takes to carve quartz crystal, they come in and they take a look at this. Oh, we wasn't aware we were going to see something like this. They said, my goodness. And, of course, they take a look at it at the back, some of the diamond carvers, and they say, well, we don't carve like this. It's carved at a wrong angle. It's carved at a 30-degree angle. It should be 45. So it makes him very different, very unique, one of a kind, and out of the 20 years I've seen thousands of crystal skulls, I've never seen another one like this. So being that he's carved this way or created this way, I believe that he was probably something very, very special to the people who used him.
How did you find out that it was carved differently? I mean, is there some kind of measurement or something that can
measure? Well, no, what makes him different is that he does give off energy strangely, but the stone kind of speaks for itself. This is visual. You can look at the stone. You can see that he's made up of five different layers of pieces of crystal carving in different directions, and you can see the matrix on it. So there's so much about this piece of crystal that's verifiable with just looking at the crystal alone without having to put cast moldings and stuff on it that way, as if it was one crystal.
Wow.
So basically, the stone speaks for itself.
Now, let me go back to how did you get all of this going in your life?
Oh, gosh. Well, it wasn't very pleasant, believe me. This started in 1973 when our 12-year-old daughter had contacted bone cancer at the age of 12. And we met the healer, who was a Red Hat Lama. He was an American. He studied to be a Red Hat. We met him through our family medical doctor at that time. And we really didn't know who Red Hats were, Lamas were. All Lamas just had four legs, and we weren't going to ask. And he was a healer. He was a very high-profile person in the 60s, 70s, and just but way too early for his time. And my husband, our medical doctor, had asked our husband to go over there because my husband did custom furniture work, and he wanted cabinets. And he saw this little man walking around out there in these black capes and gowns, and he comes back and tells me. And, of course, me being raised here in the South and raised in mainstream religion, I thought, oh, gosh, this guy must be in a bunch of woo-woo for sure. You know, don't go over there. He'll turn you into a lizard, put you in a pot. But then he laughed. He said, no, he said he seemed kind, and he said, I commit. And I said, you know, okay, you be the lizard, not me. So a few months later, he picked up a magazine that was over 30-something years old, you know, and then the synchronicity started. It was in there, Lama Norbu, American Tibetan healer, and what he did. He was a Red Hat, and Red Hats meant nothing to me, and he hollered up and said, our strange little fellow is a healer, and I said, what's a healer? And he said, he's a Red Hat Lama. And that went back and forth, but I thought he was talking about a four-legged animal, and no, he said he was talking about a two-legged man. And when we got that straightened out, I wanted to meet him. And he said, well, you already gave your daughter chemotherapy, but we'll do our best. So I just say through the Lama's work, the skull's work, the creator's work, they did extend her life, my daughter's life, for three more years when the doctors had only given her 3 months to live. And I ended up there with them at the foundation here in Houston watching them do their healing work. So this is how all this began for me, just having an open mind and a willingness to learn. Yeah?
Oh, just go ahead, okay.
Okay. So anyway, yes, this all started that way. And then they worked on her, and through their healing modalities of what they did through energy work, which I knew nothing about at all, I just say through the creator's work, the Lama's work, and the monk's work, they extended her life. That was written about in the Tibetan papers. And I ended up there with them for many more years watching them do their healing work after that. Not even really knowing why. And there was many high Lamas there. One Lama was Choji Lama, and I didn't know what Lamas were, and he was found working in a little backstreet restaurant by a man named Dundal Sarong. And Sarong came from high nobility of Tibet, and he found out he worked as a high official in the house of the Dalai Lama for 27 years. And he married into royalty, like I said, high nobility, and his father, his Dundal's own father, was the commander general of Tibet army. And he used to help the 13th Dalai Lama move around safely. And he found the Choji Lama working in a little backstreet restaurant in New York City. He escaped in 59. He needed to know, he didn't know the language. He needed to work and make a living. And he walked back there and saw this high Lama washing dishes, and he started talking Tibetan to him. He brought him to the foundation. He escaped with ancient Tibetan books. And he was always coming to get me, and many things went on there with the Lama. And I would go in there, and I thought his name, I didn't know that Choji was a title. I thought that was his name, and I would just say, hi, Choji, and he would grin, and I'd say Choji and wave, and I would wave, and he would bring me these little Tibetan hamburgers and take me to the healing room to show me, I guess it was ointments and medicines they were making. And I'd go home, and my husband would always tell me, well, what the Lamas do? And I'd say, well, you know, they stand around and talk to a rock. And I said, he took me down, he took me to the healing room and showed me a bunch of weeds and grasses in a pot. So, you know, we couldn't understand all of this. We just knew that they were doing good work with the skull. And I just thought, well, the crazy monks are talking to a rock. Couldn't understand why. But they would chant and talk Tibetan to the skull. It didn't have a name at the time. It was just skull. And they would tap energy, which I knew nothing about. And they would focus that energy into the meridian and acupuncture points of the patient's body to assist in their healing. So I knew they used it and they honored this crystal skull. And, many things went on there. The Lama would come get me, and he had acupuncture needles. I knew nothing about acupuncture. And they saw me trot into the bathroom, and the Lama would point and tell me, he was pointing for me to sit down, and I would look at those big long needles, and I kind of grinned, shook my head, and I would keep going, and I would look again, and he had these needles in his hands, and he would point, and I told me to sit down, and I'd say, uh-uh. And of course, Norby was standing over there, and he was watching this little scenario, and he said, what's the matter, Joanne? I said, well, the monks are trying to stab me with needles. He said, what do you mean they're trying to stab you with needles? I said, look, and those are some big needles. I said, not only is that a sadistic monk, he's got a grin on his face as well. Uh-uh-uh, I'm not having anything to do with the needles. But he assured me that they weren't going to hurt, but I said, look, Norby, I'm going to let the monk stab me with needles, but if he hurts me, I'm going to take every one of those needles and I'm going to stab you with them. So I said, okay. He said, that's fine. So I'm sitting there looking at the grinning monk, and he's looking at me, and he's putting them in between my toes. And I go home, and my husband says, well, what happened today? And I said, well, the monk stabbed me with needles. He said, what do you mean the monk stabbed you with needles? So he comes over there. He's complaining about his back, and they have him on the table with the needles all of them down his back. And he looks at me, and he kind of shrugs his shoulder. And I looked at him, and I said, see? So this was all of my learning lesson. This was all of the 20 years adventure of things that I went through by being there with the lamas. And before Norbu died, of course, we could go, maybe even go longer than that. Before Norbu died, he gave us the skull. Now, he could have just, I always had to wonder through the years, he could have just given this to the other monks, but I don't know. And all these people that came into my life, I was sitting in my bed one morning, and this was in the 80s, and there was a bulletin comes in and says, a prominent Houston doctor dies in plane crash. Well, it was my doctor, our family doctor, who had worked with Dr. Michael DeBake in many doctors, and he was flying out of Dallas in his own plane, and a motor came out, and the plane went down. And he had introduced us to the monks. Well, of course, our daughter passed away after 3 years. I ended up there with them for many years after that, like I said. And then Norbu passed away. The Choji Lama went to the monastery in New York City. He passed away. And then Dundal Sarong, who found the Choji Lama, he passed away. And then Nick Nocerino, who we haven't spoken about, who started all the crystal skull research way over 65 years ago and was really considered the world's foremost expert on the crystal skulls. He was from California right there, but he was raised in New York City. And he was a paranormal investigator. He started the Crystal Skull Society. He also worked for the CIA. He taught crystals and applications of crystals. Crystal skulls were not just his life. That was just a very small part. So this man was very giving. And he passed away in May 3 years ago. So everyone that moved into my life that brought me on this journey and this path of this 20 years had moved out. So just Max and I, and we have been sharing Max with the world nationally and internationally for 20 years. So many things came about in my life that brought me on this path. And Norbu was a very, like I said, he studied to be a red hat. And his teachings was infused with ancient Tibetan shamanistic practices. He studied what they call the Dung Path Way, and that's the way of the red hats. And that's an ancient, I found out that is a combination of Tibetan and Chinese ancient healing modalities working with energy in the spirit world that goes back thousands of years. And he was very, very good, just way, way too early for his time. But he was very good. He was found and backed by a 14th Apollo astronaut, Edgar Mitchell, who was the sixth man to walk on the moon, the late Doris Duke at Duke University, the late actor Yul Brynner, Harry Saltzman, who was famous for the James Bond productions, many other notable people that you would recognize, including six chiropractors and a few medical doctors that did understand what he was doing.
Hmm. Now, I read that you have kept this in your closet for several years before you ever brought it out.
We did. When Norbu gave it to us, his parting words were, again, take care of this. One of these days, you're going to know what it's for and what it's about. Well, we knew it was their healing tool, but we really didn't know what it was for or what it was about. So, yes, we brought it home. We put it in a box in the closet for almost 10 years. And I thought it was laying there around there minding its own business, but it wasn't. It was minding mine. It would come to me in dreams. It would speak to me telepathically, I guess you would call it, because, like I said, none of this was my life. And I would thought it was very strange, too. And I would go to my closet, and I could feel it sitting there saying, you haven't found this particular man for me. And I would take my foot and push it a little bit further back in the closet and throw some more pillows on it and say, you know, I'm not finding anything for you. And this went on. Now, can you imagine going to your closet arguing with a stone or a rock for 8 or 9, 10 years?
I don't think so.
No, and I thought, well, I must have told him I'm putting you downstairs in the other closet. And he said, no, I'll find you down there too. So in June of 87, that went on for a long time, 10 years. In June of 1987, it could have been a different day, a different hour, a different minute. I turned on the Houston TV show called Good Morning Houston. And that could have been a different hour, a different minute, and he would still probably be in a box in the closet. But, you know, there are really no accidents or just synchronicities. And I looked, and there was another skull looking at me. And all I could think of was, there's another talking rock. So I said, well, it doesn't look like my talking rock, but it's some kind of talking rock. So I went to call them, and they assured me, oh, no, they laughed. These are museum pieces. Now, this is before the museums found out what they had for contemporary. They said, you got plastic, you got glass. And I said, okay, well, it was given to me by a Tibetan monk. It came from Central America. Oh, we're going to be right there, they said. So pull the poor old skull out, and they started laughing at it. And they said, not at it, but laughing at us, saying, look, they don't know what she has. And they said, you don't know what you have, do you? I said, if I did, we wouldn't have called you. They said, well, these are so rare and so little known about them and even who researches them. Take it to the Houston Museum. Same thing there. So I came back, and they said, well, we'll put it on display because you got something rare. And I told the museum, no, you don't know what this is, and I don't know what this is. It didn't seem quite right to put it on display. So I brought the skull home, and I put him back in a box, and I opened it up, and I pat him on the head. And I said, well, when they say skull, that's what his name was, I'll find this particular man. And that's when he very loudly and clearly, telepathically in my head, he said, by the way, my name is not Skull. My name is Max. I jumped up and I looked at him and I said, holy moly, I got a rock in a box in the closet. He's got a name. So I thought, well, you know, this is too much for me. Well, then I found out, here's some more of these synchronicities, that there was people on that show that was from the UFO Contact Center in Arizona. And they came into that show in a van that had 50 items in there. And the show said, you can show 2 items. Now, 48 other items stayed in that van. If they had taken out anything else, I wouldn't have seen it. They took out a picture of an Egyptian bust and a crystal skull. So this is how I came in contact with the show and the museum, and I brought it back and put it in a box, and I called the show back and said, I didn't learn anything new at the museum that I learned from you. So that's when they gave me the name of F.R. Nick Nocerino of Northern California, and that's when I called him, and that's another whole scenario. Called him, said, Mr. Nocerino, and he said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, this guy, I mean, sounds pretty grouchy. Forget it. I said, no. He said, you call me for something. And I really didn't want to tell him. You know, I didn't really want to tell this man. I had a crystal skull, and I thought, well, he's going to think I'm nuts. So I kind of said, I got a crystal skull. And he got quiet. And he said, you got what? And I said, never mind. You think I'm nuts. Forget it. No. He says, don't hang up, he said. He said, describe it. And I thought, describe it. And I looked at the skull, and I said, it's a rock with a face on it. But then he said, no, describe it. And I just told him, it's a rock with a face on it. And I said, it's got 2 hollow eyes, a hollow nose, a bunch of teeth, no hair. And all I could think was this white thing on the top and on the side of his head. I told him it's got a bar mitzvah hat. And he got quiet, a bar mitzvah hat. And so he said, you know, he kept saying, he didn't say nothing. He says, don't hang up. I said, I'm not going to hang up. Don't you hang up. And then he said, I know what you have. He said, I've been looking for that skull since 1949. But he kept saying over and over, you got what? And you got what? And I thought, oh, God, the man's deaf. I've been looking for him for almost 10 years. He's deaf. He can't hear me because he keeps asking the same question. So he said, no, I know what you have. So he was looking for this skull while I was still living at home. Before I ever met Nick, before I ever knew the monk, before this skull came into my life, he had been looking for it since 1949. So between that, all these synchronicities came together, and Max came out, and you might say came out of the box, came out of the closet and into the world, and now he is a tool for people to focus on and to be able to unite mankind together in some spiritual way.
So this man,
he came from Central America?
I was told by my Lama that he came from Guatemala. Now, I don't at all believe that that's where he originated from, because these are not really Mayan, Aztec, or Native American artifacts. Because of the carving and because of what some of the things the museum said, where they said no comment after a while on TV, and because what other people have looked at, if they're in academia, I believe it goes further back than Central America.
Do you know how the Tibetan monks actually got him? I mean, how did they manage to have him?
Well, my healer was also, my healer was an undercover agent. So you got another story in here. Nick Nocerino was CIA. My healer was a DEA agent. And he went into many. He started out when he was 18 in the military, and he served in the Korean War. He went to special assignments in the military of the Marines and Air Force. And he went into the drug agency program, and he went into many university schools and prisons for drugs. He studied several years of physical anthropology too in school, and he went in there to on a drug assignment when he got out of the Red Hat Gompa, and he took interpreters. He said he wanted to know the medicines, he wanted to know the ointments, he wanted to be a healer. And he took interpreters, and he said he worked with the shamans, and he said the skull was gifted to him there, and that's when he brought it back, and he started the Healing Foundation here in Houston, and they have placed it on their altar as their healing and their spiritual tool.
Wow.
So he studied very, very hard. He went into a little Asian nation called Shikim, which is border Tibet, and he spent 3.5 years studying under a Gelong, which is a teacher priest, and that's where you go into a cave. Dark, naked, cold, and you learn. He spent 9 months there. He had to learn and meditate properly, progress to the next level, just go mad or die. He had to hold hot coals in his hands without burning his hands, and he had to cut arteries, allowing them to bleed in the bowl and mentally stop the bleeding or die. And then he lived. He came out of there, and they took him and put him in ice-cold rivers. They put him in ice-cold blankets. And he regulated his temperature, and then he was given the title of a Gelong, which is his teacher priest, and he wanted to know all the healing modalities. He went to the Philippines to study their healing modalities, and that's when he went into Central America to study the medicine. And so that's how he received Max.
My goodness. What, I just have a question. So Max, is he with you now?
He's with me now.
So then, do you still get messages from him?
My messages are different, I guess. It's different for everybody because crystal works off energy, and crystal is a big energy. It works off each individual to me. Now, I'm just telling you my truth. It works off energy fields, crystal does, and since we, each as a person, have his energy field, and we all have a low electrical charge of the brain, which is measurable, I believe each individual who comes into contact with Max or sits with Max or gets close to Max, he picks up on the energy field. He amplifies those, and he can amplify, crystal amplifies brain waves. And anytime that happens, you can slip into altered states, and I feel you tap into subconscious, unconscious. So what I feel for Max is probably more telepathically, and since I was the only child in the entire family and this wasn't part of my life, and but I just had an open mind and a willingness to learn, that he may have, you know, talked to me telepathically these 10 years, and I didn't really understand what he was saying to me, because I can be dreaming about him all the time, and sometimes I awaken and know what he's been telling me, and other times I know that he said something, but I don't remember it. So he's speaking my subconscious, unconscious, where I work off, and I guess later, and this is what other people say. So I think he works off each individual energy of maybe where a person is at, where a person is in their life at that particular time.
So when you first got him and you were dreaming, did you know the messages were coming from Max, or did you just think they were just coming from anywhere?
I didn't even know. I didn't know that there was even messages that was coming from Max. I guess I didn't know that consciously, because I didn't know what crystal does, or even had a crystal in my hand. I didn't know why I was dreaming about this crystal skull, because I'd tell my husband all the time, this, you know, after a while, the skull talks to me, and he'd say, you know, what's the matter, you? You know, he'd say, what's the matter, you woman? Have you taken the leap of your senses? What do you mean that the skull talks to you? And I just said, never mind, he doesn't say a word. So he just wasn't about to leave me alone, and, you know, maybe that is something that's already down deep inside a person, and it takes something to trigger to bring it forward. Crystal, I believe, has the ability to work off thought form or energy form. It works in everything. It's got such a, you know, energy field. All of our modern and old technology, watches, computers, radio, TV, it oscillates with such perfection, it runs the atomic clock. So somewhere, this crystal was working off my energy and speaking to me. And I just say I was asleep for a long time, and it helped me to wake up.
Did anybody else in your household hear from him?
No, because just my husband and I, and my other daughter was very, very young. So, no, it was just me. So there's really nobody in our household. I didn't have any family members, brothers, sisters, or anyone really, so I don't even really know much of my heritage and background, and I was an only child. So, right now I could name my four blood members in my family, I could name them on four fingers. So this is totally, you know, bizarre to me, even myself. It was bizarre. And when I look at the chain of events that went on back in my life that brought me to where I am today, it's still bizarre.
I know. What about the monks? Did you get a chance to, or did they speak to you about this particular skull when it was in their presence, or did they contact you later and let you know more, or was it just simply you were on your own?
I was just simply on my own, because I believe that I learned later that monks do believe life is a learning lesson. You learn through initiation and experience. They really tell you nothing. So most of the monks there, Choji Lama did not speak English. He spoke Tibetan, and I didn't speak Tibetan. So we got along pretty well with sign language and grinning and facial expressions, as people do anyway. And the other monks didn't say anything. They just talked and chanted to it and talked Tibetan to it, and they think they could, like they communicated with it. And they would use that energy from it. So I knew that they revered it, but it was still very strange to me. It's a no. I was there kind of left on my own. I believe that they were working with me in some way, or the skull was working with me in some way, but being that this was not part of my life, and like I said, I was still asleep, I was not a very good student, and it just took me a long time to wake up.
Now, I'm trying to grasp the idea of a man named Max that has the capability to talk to this crystal.
Exactly.
Is it an individual maybe from another galaxy or
a lot of people feel, again, it's going to be up individual. It's about individual self, I guess the skull is about individual growth, what you feel when you come into contact with this. Many people think that the skull or the crystal has a presence in it, and that it guides people, and it guides me. Other people feel that this is just what other people feel. Of course, your Mayans and your indigenous people, they believe in the other star systems, and they feel that these original skulls were seeded from other star systems and was brought here as a gift. Other people feel the Atlantis connection, and they feel that it was part of Atlantis. Come from an ancient civilization, and it's encoded with their technology. It can actually been from all these places. I don't think Max has just been from one place, and I don't think there is a particular man named Max that works through it. I think that this, for some reason, this skull indicated to me or told me that that's what his name was. His name was Max, and Max may be actually for something else, and something that M-A-X may stand for something else. Something that we don't really understand, but we are in our modern time, we would understand the name Max. And then some indigenous people told me that that Max meant greatness in Mayan, and that when you look into Max's eyes, you're looking at a reflection of your own self, of who you are and who you aspire to be. And that there was a deity of Maximum over there, and he was a god. And yes. Some of them think that he was a reincarnate, that he represents the Maximum God. So I think maybe it depends on a person's levels of, you know, growth and understanding, and again, where they are at that point in their life of how they understand this to be for them.
Paula, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. You had a question maybe for Joanne?
I came late in the interview, but how many other skulls are out there that are similar to Max?
There are no skulls out there that are even remotely similar to Max. They'll be carved in the shape of a skull. Like most of them, the legend states there are 13. But that is just a legend. You know, there are many myths and legends throughout mankind. However, most legends get its start somewhere, and I believe the legend started with Mr. Nick Nocerino, who started all the crystal skull research, because he was a paranormal researcher. He had a boyhood vision. And in his boyhood vision, he envisioned a master skull surrounded by 12 smaller skulls, and that master skull contained all the wisdom and information of the other 12, and then the legend grew. However, regardless whether the legend is true or not or whatever, it is the beauty of what the legend has left behind, how all these skulls throughout the world have entered people's lives, and what these skulls have done for people's lives, how they have changed people's lives for the better, how these skulls have become people's tools of focus for them to express themselves through. So the legend states there are 13 authentic ancient crystal skulls, and that one day they would all be rediscovered and brought together for the collective wisdom to be made available. But mankind first has to be sufficiently evolved, both morally and spiritually, so as not to be with the great power and knowledge, and that was supposed to have been handed down over thousands of years. But again, it is saying it is the legend of the 13 crystal skulls. So I feel a person listens to a legend, like the legendary Atlantis or the many legends and myths, and each person takes from a legend or myth what they feel that they can believe in that legend or myth, and then they go with it for their own self. But there are only, since they have to be researched, and since there's so many of these crystal skulls floating around out there that people pick up, and believe me, I've been doing this 20 years, so I do know about this dupe and con job of crystal skulls. And they're everywhere. People say, look at this old skull. I've seen many people, believe me, come and gone with new skulls, and skulls that look old, where they have been duping and conning people, and they just couldn't make it because they don't have a story. And you can't treat these skulls this way. I think these were ceremonial objects, maybe devotional icons, and if it's sacredness, you just can't treat the skulls this way, or you won't last very long. But there's only two. They had to be researched, and these were there were seven researched 11 years ago in 1996 by the British Museum. And there's elaborate research that goes into it, where there's cast moldings put on the teeth and around the brow, and that's backplated by fine layer of gold, so they get a reflection, and that goes through a very powerful scanning electron microscope, and they're looking for tool marks. And the only two that the British Museum on national TV said no comment to was Max and Nick Nocerino's skull, Shauna Roth. And that is the only two, and these are academically researched. I've seen these skulls come from Mexico and China, where they're beat up and chipped up and dirt rubbed in them, and they look like they're a million years old. And I've seen so many of them, I can usually point them out. And if you've never heard of them, you can be fooled very easily. So I tell people who have not heard of them, you just have to ask questions. But there's only seven crystal skulls that I know of that's actually been academically researched. And there's only Max and Shauna Ra that I know of that I consider that are genuine right now, because they've been academically researched. The British Museum said no comment. And of course, you say a lot just saying nothing. And they tried to have the documentary pulled and couldn't, and it went out that way. I think it just showed here about 6 weeks ago on the History Channel. So, there's not another one. I've seen thousands of crystal skulls, but I have never seen another crystal skull like Max.
So I wonder where the other 11 are.
Well, if there isn't other 11, there's no telling where. They could be gone, they could be crushed, they could be in somebody's closet, they could be anywhere. And the idea is trying to find, if the legend is true, is to find a tribe to find the true one.
Has Max ever said anything about as far as who it should be passed down to if you leave this planet as well?
You know, people ask me that all the time, and I just let, you know, I try to push things and make things happen, and I feel that things happen in their own time. And I feel that Max will be passed down to the right person or right group, and they'll know what they have, because I've had many groups and people who would take Max in a heartbeat. And it just really isn't the right person. It's to either they will go behind glass, or they'll just set it in their closets, or do what I do, you know, didn't know what they had. So I believe when that time comes, I will have no doubt in my mind that it will be the right person.
Have you had any special experiences with Max that beyond what you've told us already?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. There's so many experiences with Max. Every day, Max is a new adventure. Every time goes out, there's a new adventure. What people, there's so many emotions that come up in people where people say they've tapped into the other side. They've tapped into an ancestor. They've tapped into the self. Max gives off strange energy. We'll have pictures that I take with me that I show where the energy comes off of him. Here just 4 months ago in Safety Harbor, Florida, when a man was sitting in front of him with a broken back. And ectoplasma is an energy field, and ectoplasma can come in many different forms as a mist or a liquid, or it'll go around high energy icons, and it doesn't happen all the time. And there's ectoplasma coming off of his third eye, what we call his third eye, and it goes up into a spinal cord, and it's about 2 feet off of Max. And Max is superimposed, because this picture was taken with just a little digital. Max is superimposed on top of himself. And right where the man broke his back, it goes and it curves right there. And when you look into the spinal cord, this vertebrae is all in it. So this is very, very unique. It even shocked me. And several doctors in the Florida picked it up and looked at the picture, and they just put it down and shake their head. And then one man went up and put his third eye to Max's third eye, and we photographed it. That picture I bring with this, where the energy just engulfed him, and you can see the energy going up over the top of his head. I have another one out of Santa Monica, California, where a man put his head to Max's, and Max just turns into this bright, bright ball of white light. The ectoplasma, here he turns off, the energy comes off of him, and it goes up the man's right arm up into his, like his wrist, and it's all around his head, and he's kind of into a blur of white light. And then I just did the Dowsers Convention, and someone took a picture, and they sent it through to me, and Max is blue. Because sometimes he turns colors, and he's blue, and it's almost you're looking through him fluidly like water. You just see through him. So, yes, many different strange things happen around Max, and we've even gone to the mainstream ministers' homes who understand Max as a tool of focus and a gift that's been left behind. And I think the Creator has given us many gifts and tools in many forms, and to me, Max is just one of those gifts given to us. For people who want to open their hearts and mind and understanding that he is a tool of focus and no more. And
so that was the bad back. Did his back heal?
He's getting better, yes. He's gotten much better. And so these kind of strange things happen. I have not seen this kind of stuff off of any of the other skulls. And I believe it's due by the way he's created and the many hands that's touched him and created him. And the way he's programmed, and the different crystals that surround him are different crystals. These crystals have been very, very deep in the earth. I think Max has been in many, many different places all over the world at many different times where he was needed, not just in one place, and been handed down, and even gone over on boats. I feel water with him. And he's been in many cultures. He told me that it's come and gone that we never will know that even existed. Don't even have a language for. And so it's the way, it doesn't make him better. It just makes him unique and different because of these different layers of crystals that he's made up of. And some of your top geologists and some academics have looked at him and they said, you know, they've seen stuff, they've never seen anything like this, the way he's created down inside and the way the matrix crisscrosses all down inside. And you can't see this by just looking at a picture. He hides it. You have to, you look at it by looking at him.
Wow. Have you written anything down, a book or anything like this that has been a composite of what's going on? And
I keep little notes and things. I started about 10 years ago, I have a copyrighted manuscript about my life and Max. but now I could probably turn it into three books. And I keep things written, and of course they're in my head of different things. I could tell you so many other things that are just synchronicities that happen one after another, but it would take too long, of what things would lead into another about Max, what he did and how he created things. And I hope one day we'll start it, and we will eventually. It wasn't my idea to ever go out and, you know, do books and sell this or that, but people have asked me so long, you know, please put this down. And so, you know, maybe I've started a little bit of a book, and as I move forward, I'm going to try to continue with that.
So you take Max in front of a group of people, and then just whatever happens, happens?
Whatever happens, happens. Yeah, you can never predict. There is no two things alike. There's nothing you can predict that's going to happen for each individual, because, like I said, and crystal works off of energy, and two people and three people can sit with Max at the very same time and completely pick up something totally, totally different, because he's picking up on each person's energy at the very same time.
So the changing of Max's color, was this picked up on a photograph, or?
This was picked up on a photograph. Yeah, it changed, kind of turned blue, and every now and then he has a gold hue to him. I have one picture here too that I take out every now and then, that I'm sitting there and I'm kind of, I guess he responds to my energy when I speak to him, and I'm speaking to him, and I had someone take a picture across it, and there's gold hue, like another type of ectoplasm. There's gold that's just radiating off of the whole, you can't hardly see his face. His face is kind of blurred, and the gold hue is standing out about a foot off his face, and it goes into a gold hue.
Does he ever use you as a spokesperson? I mean, speaking to these people that come into the room with him?
I don't give advice and tell people what they should see or feel or do, because I feel that people should have that experience for themselves. I feel what he tells me, and some of the things I do keep to myself, but I feel energy off of people. I can sometimes read people. I don't tell them that, but I can do that, and I didn't know that I can do that, and maybe I did that from a child. I don't know, because if you're not aware of this, you know, then you have nothing to compare it to. But he does not tell me messages or give me messages precisely for me to give to another person. I really feel that Max is a tool of focus for each person to tap in and to receive what is for them at that particular time.
So, with a group of people, you just come in and around, and do people start talking, or everybody's normally quiet?
Well, generally the people will talk and they'll come up. Usually when I do it with a group of people and I'm doing the lecture, Max goes into the center, and then people will do a center, and I will do the story of Max. I will tell people how he came. It goes over an hour. We get into detail, and I will tell people how he came into my life. And from that point after that, then each person from the group, I'll come get them and bring them up, and they can come in for a little few seconds, and they get to touch Max and go back. And sometimes we share that, and sometimes they're just so overwhelmed they don't know what has gone on. And a lot of people have a private session, and private sessions are different than your group session because your energies are different. You know, in energy, we do try to do a circle, because energy runs around a circle, and it brings up that energy more around a circle. I think that's why the shape of the skull is the energy runs around the circle more than you would a square. And so I allow people to understand it in their own way, as I understand it in my way, without, you know, condemnation or bashing and trashing people, because this is not what that's about. This is not something that you force upon people. This is something that you just share with people, and if they want to share the energy, then they do so. And then they share what they have to offer with each other. So I think he's here to bring people together. He's a connection, not only to bring each person back to connect to themselves, but to connect people around the world. He's here as a connection to the universe, to bring people together of all colors, all cultures, so that they can talk for a greater understanding of one another, because people will get together and say, oh, I haven't met you in years, and Max has brought them back together. He has brought people together that wasn't expected to come to there, and they had gotten married. They have come together because of Max. So Max has brought many good things into people's lives. If you have an open heart and are willing to learn and to understand what the skulls really meant back in time, they were keepers of knowledge. They were wisdom keepers. They were back in the monks. The monks had them back in the 18th, 19th century, the human skull, where they meditated with the skulls because they were this is what they respected. It was the ancestors. That's why they had the Day of the Dead in Mexico, All Souls Day, where they honor the skulls, the ancestors to the skulls, and they have them on the Catholic churches, the human skulls, and over in Italy, in the little alcoves are human skulls. They bury the bones beneath the altar, and they take care, and they dust these, because this was an honor of the skull, because the bone holds genetic memory, it's DNA, so it's a wisdom keeper. And even over back in Rome, over in Italy, they have a cathedral with Mary Magdalene on the wall with the skull at her feet. They have her sitting at a desk, a very famous picture of her in Italy, in France, where she holds the human skull in her lap because she's holding the wisdom keeper. And I believe those wisdom keepers are telling people that, each person is important, and to remember that self is important, and that we come together as a oneness.
That's a very important message right now.
Yes, it is. It's a very important message that we come together as a oneness, and to instead of battling, to have a greater understanding of one another, because we are all the product of the upbringing. We're all the product of cultural upbringing, and a child is what they are taught. And there comes a time in a person's life that even though whatever we're taught, whether that's whatever we think is negative, maybe there's no negative, there's no positive, it's what mankind has put is negative and positive, what we have laws to determine that. There comes a time in a one's life that when we grow up and we become responsible for our own actions. And I think Max is here to tell each person that, do not let people tear you down or tell you you can't do this, you can't do that. That you are inadvertently responsible for your own thoughts, your own actions. No one else is. And if you want to do something, you can reach your highest goal.
That's a powerful comment that you've made, and I'm sure a lot of people need to hear that one. And certainly you've pierced the door further for ourselves and our listeners. It's such an opening to hear that this beautiful consciousness has, become part of our earth. Yeah.
Well, he gave me, like I said, Max is here to inspire. He's here to encourage a person's spirit. He's here to give them an insight into many things, not only about themselves, but the past history of the planet and even the past history of man. And through that inspiration, he gave me a peace message, and I'd be glad to share it with you because I've shared it with France, I shared it with Holland, I've shared it all over North America. And he gave me a peace message back in 1999, which really didn't mean a whole lot then to me. And people have asked for that peace message, which I give out. And it's called, and he even gave me the words when I was walking the treadmill, so I just call walking the treadmill for peace. Max's peace message, but he showed me the world, and I was looking out of the world through his eyes, and I could see the anguish of the world and the turmoil of the world, but then I could see the healing of the world, and down that world the words were peace, and he stated, P is for the past mistakes for killing Mother Earth, E is for our effort in the sharing of her rebirth, A is for all mankind, red, yellow, black, and white, C is for the courage it will take to make it right. E is not for easy. We'll have to fight with all our might. To make this world a better place, our love will make it right. Mankind will not awaken until we learn how to blend each other's truths for love and peace. It all begins within. That is how we're going to make it. That is how we'll win. The wars that we hate so much really do begin within. Until we trust each other and we learn how to bend, these wars will keep on raging right to the very end. Put all this together and it spells peace for you and me, where all will come together in a world that will be free. And he gave me those words just through various dreams, and I'd get up and write them down. And he said, if you don't write them down, you'll forget them. And I argued with him, and I wrote them down and put them together, and that's what he said.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That was a perfect way to end our show today.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Joanne, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure here, too.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm sure our listeners will love it too. And we send, you know, the love and peace out to all our listeners and to you and your family. And it's, you know, we're at the wonderful stage now in our life where we can see the progression, I think.
Well, we hope so, and it's got to be. There's going to have to be a turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Joanne.
It's been a pleasure. I thank you as well.
And
thank you.
Your show, this show will be archived on our website.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
God bless. Thank
God
you.
God bless.